Warm greetings to our listeners, viewers, and welcome back to Beyond the Code, AI and Law. I'm your host, Letlhokwa Mpedi. In this series, we unpack the profound ways emerging technologies are rewriting the rules of our society, our professions, and fundamentally, our legal frameworks. As we reflect on three decades of our constitutional democracy, we are confronted with a dual challenge. On one hand, we must guard the timeless, transformative values enshrined in our Constitution. On the other hand, we must steer through a rapidly accelerating technological evolution. Artificial intelligence is no longer a futuristic concept. It is actively shaping our present. But how does AI intersect with the deep human necessity of justice? Can code help us deliver on the promise of an egalitarian society, or does it threaten to deepen existing inequalities? To help us entangle these critical questions, I am profoundly honored to welcome a guest who stands uniquely at the intersection of public policy, governance, and technology. She is the Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development of the Republic of South Africa, and interestingly, an alumnus and current doctoral candidate at the great University of Johannesburg. More uniquely still, she brings global perspective to this topic, having served a full term, ladies and gentlemen, on the World Economic Forum's Global Artificial Intelligence Council. Minister Mamoloko Kubai, thank you very much for joining us today on Beyond the Code, AI and Law.
Thank you very much, Prof, for inviting me and for hosting this. I'm really happy to be here as part of this great university. It's home for me.
Wonderful. Minister, I want to start right there with your background. It is rare to have a Minister of Justice who has sat on a global AI council looking at machine learning governance on an international scale. When you look at the South African landscape through the dual lens, global tech trends versus local socioeconomic realities, what is your fundamental philosophy on how AI should be approached by our judicial system?
No, thank you. I served in the global AI. I was at the Minister of Science and Technology at the time. Mm-hmm. And then I also served at WEF for the other side of tourism. But the issue for us and why this topic remains critical is to understand the historical past of South Africa. Mm. We are a country that comes from injustices in terms of segregation, a majority of the people being denied opportunities, no access to anything. Yeah. But also justice was the law. It was the law to segregate. It was That's the law right. to oppress. Mm-hmm. And with that, it is important that as we bring, as you say, artificial intelligence is not futuristic. Yes. It's the present today.
That's right.
As we experience those, the important thing would be how do we ensure that we don't perpetuate the inequalities. Mm-hmm. We don't perpetuate the digital divide where you have the rural continue not to have access. Mm-hmm. And it's still a challenge. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at today, the access to digital platforms and access to technology compared between urban and rural, it's still a huge challenge. Mm-hmm. Many of our communities would rather focus on issues that are just service delivery or their basic needs than technology. But for us in justice, because it will help us to close the distances. For example, currently we just released a report that talks about rationalization of our courts.
Right.
In the report, Judge Museneke looked at the distances people travel to access courts. And you find, for example, in Northern Cape, you've got one superior court that is in Kimberley. Mm-hmm. So somebody who's coming from Springbok wanting to access that high court has to travel more than 700 kilometers to access it.
Yeah.
Whereas if you have digital technologies to access and to assist the communities in Springbok, for example, to make sure that they have access to justice. But we've got to make sure that, because currently, as we know, the technology that is there, the data sets that are there, are still not yet understanding our nuances as a country and the historical past. So the development, and that's why we are excited that UJ has taken this up. Because it will address those issues. It has opportunities for us to address the difficulties that we have. Access to justice in terms of closing the distance. Access to justice in terms of understanding the context of the cases. Because somebody can just put a case in AI and say, for example, where do I find a person for this? And then AI can be able to generate to say, this is what you need to do. Even the steps of explaining. This is what you, how do you access court in South Africa? So it does that. And I do believe that it closes the gaps in terms of understanding of the judicial processes because it's very complex and tedious, but also for access. So I do think that it has huge opportunity for us.
Minister, anyone who has walked through our magistrates' courts or high courts knows that the wheels of justice can grind slowly. We see mountains of paper, archiving challenges, and administrative backlogs. Before we can even talk about advanced predictive AI, where are we with basic digital transformation in the department? And how do we bridge the gap between legacy systems and intelligent automation?
Look, definitely we still have a long way to go. I think the first rollout of the court online that was it's in relation to high courts. We're currently pending Supreme Court of Appeal and the Constitutional Court. So we still don't have, we're rolling it out this year. But all our high courts across the country, we've even trained. It required us to train our judges. It required us to train our practitioners. It required even in terms of staff. And that it's basic to be able to get the allocation of cases, to load the documents online so that it's not served on papers, because that was also one of the issues. But we still have to do that for the lower courts, which is the magistrates.
Yes, yes.
And that's where the forefront of service delivery is. Yes.
They are the closest to the people.
They deal with a lot of issues. I mean, first instances of gender-based violence issues, you there, family court issues, you'll find them there.
So small claims.
Small claims courts are there. We run them there. So they're still manual. So that's one of the areas that in this, we start in this financial aid to roll out. But we've got quite a number of services that we're trying to move online. We currently, as the Department of Justice, responsible for what it's called integrated justice system. This is meant to develop a digital platform where you start at a police station, where a police, when you open a case, it go online so that the docket is recorded online. It's no longer paper. We moved quite a lot in that. You'd hear, even when you hear in the public, you'd hear about somebody went and looked at the system to get a case. It's because we've started that. And then we're rolling out the fingerprints machines so that anyone that comes in conflict with the law, we can have the fingerprints so that if this person is wanted in another province, the system can tell us that actually this is a multiple offender, which previously we didn't have. So that's the first point at police station. And then it moves to court so that we have a platform where a docket can move from police station directly to court where a magistrate or a judge will have access to it. And then a prosecutor will have access to it. A legal aid practitioner will have access so that they can, each one can be able to deal with the parts of the case and don't have to move one docket hard copy to the different people, and also to be able to track the reallocation, the allocation of the cases, and then from there moves into correctional services. But also we're working with Home Affairs. We've developed under AGS the new digital system of IDs, and then we're moving to digital IDs. But also in terms of border management, that system is working. So we're working on that. It's coming quite nicely. We're hoping that as we finish that system, it will help us to have the justice system online, working with all the integrated parts of it, so that you track the offender or the person who is a suspect from being a suspect to being an offender and tracking them when they are actually on parole. Yeah. So that's what the system is meant to be. And that's what we are the custodian. We've been given that responsibility as justice to do.
Wow. Congratulations. I must say great work is being done. And of course, one cannot do everything at once. And I must commend you and the department for working hard on this important project and bringing other role players like Home Affairs and so on. Last year, Professor Chilizi Marwala, my predecessor and now the rector of the United Nations University, were invited to address the judges. We had a great interaction with the judges on AI and the law. And it was really an interesting conversation. I mean, to see the judges saying, look, let's engage on this because we cannot leave the judges behind. I mean, when litigants go there with an AI and a law problem to a court of law, judges cannot say, we don't know what you're talking about, go home. They have to adjudicate. So we have to work together. We also published now by Prof. Marwala and I published a book, AI and the Law. And there is a copy, and I have a copy for you, Honorable Minister.
Thank you.
In that book, you know, we looked extensively at how automation can optimize these issues. We talk and examine institutional workflows and so on. But one of the anxieties we frequently encounter when discussing with judicial officers and traditional legal practitioners is a fear of the unknown, or worse, a fear of displacement. So how are our courts and state attorney officers responding to this transition in your experience?
I guess because we've got a training college.
Yes,
in terms of Bridget Mabandla training.
Yes.
But we've got what we call SAJAY. It's training for judicial officers.
Yeah.
One of the issues is to consistently ensure that we train them, we equip them, because there is no way that they cannot deal with artificial intelligence. And the complexity of today of digital crimes that are committed on digital platforms, whether you talk about cryptocurrency, they will have to preside over those cases. And as I make an example, when I was addressing today, that even on the migration issue, if somebody goes and say, I'm laying a complaint because this person has generated fake news that I have been damaged, AI generated videos that has damaged my reputation, a judge will have to make a presiding, will have to preside over that case.
And make a decision.
And make a decision.
Yeah.
So there is no way that our judiciary would not have to do that. So we ensuring consistently of training and information sharing, and we really appreciate it. I think we'll definitely ask them to partner with you
Important.
At SAJAY so that when they do this training, not only about only addressing the conferences, but in the modules that they do
Important.
In training,
Indeed,
so that this is incorporated because it does have, it's going to affect our lives. It's going to affect, it's part of us.
Yeah.
As I'm saying, current experiences show that they is a need for us to ensure that it's incorporated.
Yeah.
So the training is still going and the conversation. And that's why I was happy when I saw the Chief Justice leading in terms of that conference to say, we are ready. We want to develop a policy. We want to be ahead of our times, but we shouldn't be left behind as the judiciary. And that's what we welcome.
No, absolutely. Honorable Minister, I'm glad you mentioned SAJAY. You know, for many years, when I was dean of our Faculty of Law, I served on the board of SAJAY. Actually, I was also on the exco of SAJAY when I served as president of the South African Law Deans Association. Mm-hmm. And I must say, SAJAY is also doing good work. This partnership between SAJAY, which is South African Judicial Education Institute, and law faculties throughout the country, is extremely important for us to tackle this important topic. Our common law and jurisprudence are predominantly written in English and Afrikaans. Yet for millions of our citizens, English is not their primary language of thought or expression. If an AI platform only understands English, we run the risk of creating a digital form of linguistic exclusion. How do we ensure that our AI solutions speak the languages of our people?
I think we've got to look at one, language mm-hmm. development.
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
we still yeah. have a long
yeah.
way.
Yeah.
There are very few even judgments that are delivered in mm-hmm. indigenous languages.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes even when they are translated, they're mm-hmm. not even translated mm-hmm. with the correct language.
Mm-hmm.
That is still mm-hmm. the mm-hmm. challenge that we mm-hmm. have. I know if we look at what Prof. Mutsekga has said previously,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
you say you
yeah.
have somebody who speaks and the dialect
yeah.
of
yeah.
the languages
yeah.
are complex.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's something that we must acknowledge that we're yeah. going to take some time
mm-hmm.
to reach at. But what, for me, it says institution,
mm.
conferences mm. like this, these dialogues like this, acknowledges where the gaps are.
Mm. Mm.
And what we need is the development of the languages or even in terms of the
mm.
machines
mm.
to have exposure mm. and mm. for us to have the data sets
mm.
of the languages mm. so that it doesn't mm. discriminate.
Yeah.
And as you know, mm. in courts,
mm. Mm.
our constitution says mm. if you are to try a person,
yeah.
you must try a person
mm.
in the language that they understand.
They understand, yes.
So if mm. you are to use mm. AI, you've mm. got to have mm. the right mm. concepts because
yeah.
somebody will use an idiom.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And it can be translated differently.
And it's something else.
And it's something else. So for a fairness of a trial is that I must be tried in a language that I
yes.
am comfortable with. And the machine and AI for it to be utilized effectively in our courts, it will have to be developed in that. So I think it's an area where researchers and development of language
yeah.
have
it's important.
To be able to work on to assist the country not to be left behind.
It's
but true. Also while we're catching up with global communities and global trends, not to leave our own people behind
yeah.
because that would be also a most
that
important
would be said,
thing.
Yeah, indeed, I agree with you 100%. Minister, you talked about data sets, the importance of not discriminating against the people as we move forward. Here is another important point that I would like to raise. Algorithms are trained on historical data. Now, in law, of course, we'll have to use old historical data. And given our history, you know, of apartheid, if we were to bring some of these old cases, our system is based on judicial precedent. There's a risk of bringing those old cases that are based on racial or gender biases and so on. So how do we regulate AI to ensure that it doesn't entrench those past injustices? It's tricky, isn't it?
It is quite
yeah,
tricky.
Yeah.
But I think if we utilize, for example, we do note when did we start to have democratic
that's right,
instances.
Yeah.
So when we utilize that data, we digitize all those judgments, we digitize all those records. They help in terms of developing
that's right.
Information that is needed and therefore it can be computed in the algorithm. And we'll have to have people who sit
yeah.
and look at
yeah,
what is
yeah.
being produced so that we can analyze and correct where it's needed. I think that's the first point. And that's why it's important for the digital of records. We are doing that in the Justice Department. It's not yet complete, but also taking those historic records to digitize them so that you can have. Currently, we have quite a number of them that are case law, which are online, which you'd be able to find. But you'd have to be consistent in terms of monitoring and evaluation, but also in terms of research capacity to analyze what has been. I do think that the historic ones as well, they are critical because if you don't use what apartheid had to do,
yeah.
we can falter and
yeah.
fall into that. You find that your algorithm gives
yeah.
you a solution
yeah.
of what was terrible
yeah.
In,
yeah.
the past
in the past yeah.
as an alternative.
Yes. Yes.
So it's good to load that
yeah.
as well as data sets to have them so that they give you, it's how you'll be able to
yeah.
to program them,
yeah, yeah,
to be able
yeah.
to say, this is what the context of this information is,
yeah.
to be able to analyze. It's not an easy thing.
It's
but
not,
I
yeah.
do think, I always say to young researchers to say, South Africa as a country has quite a rich, it's a gold mine for researchers to be able to use.
Yeah. Wow. No, I agree with you 100%. Minister, court records contain some of the most sensitive personal data imaginable. And now, you know, we have a Protection of Personal Information Act. And this point that I'm raising is connected to this act. So we have these court records that contain some of this personal information, criminal records, domestic disputes, identity numbers, and children's details. And to a certain extent, we do protect the details of people, like sensitive cases. You have cases like S versus Y and so on. But we still have some way to go to protect this personal information. How do we balance the hunger of machine learning models for data with the absolute right to privacy of our citizens? Tricky, isn't it?
Yeah, it is quite tricky because definitely somebody can take you for litigation for information that is not supposed to. But when you load cases, because it will be Mamoloko versus state, you know, and it will have details of Mamoloko who is litigating. Those such, and on criminal matters as well. I mean, I think it goes to the issue of where a person has been even... have been convicted, has been sentenced, and then they say, no, I can't be secondary criminalized.
Yes.
Because I've served my
time. I paid my price, erase.
It's unfortunate that you can't erase completely because it's part of the history. So the protection of information, personal information remains critical. And I think as we develop, because at least we've got the information regulator in the country to guide us.
Yes.
I think that's the foresight as well that has been seen to say, while we have this piece of legislation, let's put together an institution that will consistently look at how this information is being developed and whether it's compliance and advice and how it can be complied. So it's something that we'll have to go and do as we go. And I think global countries have been dealing with this. I remember Canada at some point was dealing with this, where they were refusing for certain information to be included on public participation by parliament.
Yes.
One of their parliamentarians wrote about the personal use of personal information and protecting. But even they went to extremes at that time, were saying, even by nuances of saying this is the street, I can be known.
Yeah.
You know, even if you reflect on the case, I can be known, it's me. Yeah. And therefore they were refusing for that information to go to date. So we can't go to that extreme because it will deny us the opportunity of going into the future and being able to be part of the global as well. Because whether we like it or not, if we don't inform and create a mine of information and data that is relevant to us, like today we talk about North America and Asia that is dominating in terms of data sets, and that's why AI will understand and reflect them better than it reflects us as Africans. So we've got to come and catch up and make sure that that information is there, so that what you look for and what you are finding out of AI is not contrary to our own environment and doesn't take into our context into consideration.
Wow, absolutely. Minister, this is Women's Month, and we are celebrating the 70th anniversary since that famous march to the Union Building. And I feel so privileged to have this opportunity to sit with you. I can't miss this opportunity to invite you to share, you know, your words of wisdom as we celebrate this 70th anniversary. We've come a long way, and happy Women's Month.
No, thanks. I think as a woman in this country, and a Black woman for that matter, looking historically, having the responsibility I have in the Republic of South Africa, having to serve, it's a privilege and honor. And I really pay tribute to those women because we're standing on their shoulders.
Yes.
Giants that refused to accept the circumstances as the norm, as something that they had to deal with.
Yeah.
And had to march. Yeah. I mean, the other day we were reflecting about this, as the anniversary, and we're talking about the strength of women in this country. Mm. And I must say, in the judiciary, we've got the Constitutional Court is led by a woman.
Yeah.
The Superior Court is second highest court in the land. SCA is led by a woman.
Yeah.
So it's Chief Justice Maya and it's President Mulemela in the Supreme Court of Appeal.
Yeah.
And you've got several judge presidents who are women in this country.
Yeah.
Well, and majority of the magistrates in this country are women. More than 52% are women. Impressive. And this is the journey that we have traveled. But I want to say to many to say it's not a journey that we must, it's not achievement that we must take for granted.
Yes.
It's not what we must take. We must always make sure that we protect our democracy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. 30 years of our constitution live within the principles of our values. And one of the things I read, and I was consulting others, Mam Sophie de Bruin, for example, asking them. And they say to us, they arrived at Union Building on that day. They stood on those steps. If you look at the stairs there in Union Building, you'll find the names. President talks about, President Ramaphosa talks about the pride he takes about taking heads of state who are doing state visits there. But they say they stood there silently for 30 minutes.
Wow.
No movement, no speaking, no singing, nothing.
Wow.
And it was a moment of reflection to say, we are here. So it meditation. For me, when I interpreted, I interpreted it as meditation. Those who were praying, praying for the country, the sustainability that this country must be where it is today. It is those prayers. It is those meditations. It is that courage of standing to say enough is enough, and
is
saying
enough.
That we want to see the country going forward. So to the many women, we are here standing on the shoulders of the heroines of our struggle, women who refused to be silenced, women who refused to say that there are places in the kitchens, but women who took a stand. And as we hold this position, we must do it in ethical.
Yeah,
we must hold them in the dignity that they deserve, and we must do our
that
best.
They deserve.
We must serve to the
we
best
must
of
serve
our ability.
To the best of our ability. Mbokot, you know, this great University of Johannesburg, your university, honored
Definitely.
Mom Sophie de Bruin,
yes,
with an honorary doctorate.
Oh, wonderful.
In law.
In law.
Human rights for
human
her contribution.
Rights.
And we've got in a council award that is presented every year, Ellen Kuzayo Award that is presented every year to honor this great woman. Happy Women's Month.
Thank you.
To you and the amazing women out there. Wow, Minister, that was an incredibly inspiring note to end our conversation. Thank you very much for your leadership.
Thank you very much for hosting me, Prof. I really appreciate being part of this great university.
Of Johannesburg.
Of Johannesburg, yes.
And to our viewers and listeners, thank you for tuning in. Until next time, remember that as we build the code of tomorrow, we must always safeguard the humanity of today. Stay sharp and stay curious.